Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The COVID pandemic has turned all of our worlds upside down, and for the world of trying to manage pet adoptions and street strays and other animal issues, things have got to be pretty hairy these days at San Antonio Animal Care Services, and we're overdue for a check-in with ACS, so it's great to welcome back Lisa Norwood, Public Information and Outreach Manager for the San Antonio Animal Care Services. Lisa Norwood, welcome back to The Source.
Thanks for having us on, Dave.
Also, Officer Shannon Sims, Assistant Director for the City of San Antonio's Animal Care Services Department. Officer Sims, good to have you back.
Hey, thanks so much for having us, Dave.
And our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Give us a call with your questions and comments about how things are going in the world of pets during the COVID outbreak. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. So Lisa Norwood, how have things been going?
They have been going actually much better than we thought they would. You know, I mean, a lot of people have been engaged in various protocols that they've had to put in place, social distancing guidelines that they've had to put in place as a result of the ongoing pandemic. And, you know, Animal Care Services has been no different. We've put in a lot of different policy changes, a lot of process changes, not just to keep the public safe, but to keep our staff safe as well. But we've actually seen a lot of things that have been positive as a result of those guidelines that we've put in place. Things like increased foster capacity, we're still doing adoptions, and increasingly we're getting more and more animals back into our clinic to do spay-neuter as well.
All right, so Officer Sims, tell us how it's impacting your area, because you're doing a lot of enforcement.
Absolutely. I mean, for us, we pretty much have kept our nose to the grindstone. Obviously, we, like Lisa had mentioned, we had to, you know, implement some new processes and things like that where, you know, on the occasions where we have an officer that has to make location at a COVID-positive house, we've had to implement some more PPE, you know, some personal protective equipment and things like that that the officers are using. But largely, we've been able to kind of maintain our status quo, our operations, still getting, you know, all the calls for service. Obviously, during the pandemic, we expected actually an increase in calls for service. We saw a slight decrease, which was good because, you know, we had some officers that had to go out for different reasons during COVID. But we've been able to pretty much balance everything out, and we're continuing to do our cruelty investigations, our dangerous investigations, as well as just kind of the run-of-the-mill type calls that we see on a daily basis.
So one bottom line we can put out there this afternoon is that you guys are still on the job, and if people have concerns, if they see animal cruelty, they still need to reach out to you.
Absolutely. We have not seen a break for even a, even an hour since the pandemic started. All my officers have been out there as usual, working their, you know, working themselves to the bone, as well as the staff here at ACS that are caring for the animals that we're bringing in.
If you see animal cruelty happening, is 911 appropriate, or is it
really the most? Yeah, David, the best way to handle a cruelty situation is to call 311. Obviously, if there's something that's going on right then and there, and you know, and you know, 311 is closed, or it's in the middle of the night, or something like that, definitely call 311. We work with SAPD very closely, but to a large degree, we would like to see folks report that through 311. Let's keep that off the police officers' plates. Obviously, there's plenty for them to be doing out there, and we have the staff that's trained in those situations.
So, Lisa Norwood, walk me through how things have changed. If I would go to the ACS headquarters and wanted to say, I want to adopt a pet, or what big difference am I going to see?
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually a number of things that are going to look different, that are going to feel different when you come here to Animal Care Services, our main shelter off of 151 and Old Highway 90. So first things first, we changed our hours of operations. And the reason we did that is to saturate our staffing during our peak public traffic. So our hours have changed slightly from 11 a.m. as an opening to 1 p.m. as an opening. So now we're open from 1 to 7 Monday through Friday, and then from 11 to 5 on weekends. So that was one thing that we did, again, to reflect our peak public traffic hours. But another thing that we did is we transformed our annex building, which was a place that we had meetings, where we did different trainings and such. We transformed that into a welcome center, and then expanded our adoption hub. So that is where we're actually doing a lot of the life-saving work that we do here at ACS. The Welcome Center is where people will first check in. They'll meet with our front desk, and those folks will be able to get information on what kennels to go to, what the adoption process is. But the most important thing I think people need to understand is that we've now instituted a appointment-based system for campus services, including adoptions. So that appointment system is accessible 24 hours a day. You can go to this appointment system at saacs.info/services and sign up to get an appointment for a number of different campus services. Once you have got your appointment, say you're going to come in to adopt, Dave, you're going to come in, you're going to go to our welcome center, where you'll be greeted by a security who will ensure that you're wearing a mask, ensure that your temperature is taken, all in line with current social distancing and COVID guidelines. Then when you come in, we'll be able to direct you to what kennel you need to go to or the next step in your process for the service that you're there for. So all of our animals are still adoptable. All of our adoptions are still taking place. But when you do come to pick up your animal, you don't actually have to come inside. We've instituted curbside pickup for our adoption animals. So once your adoption's completed and you're ready to go, we'll bring you back to the shelter, and you'll wait in your car, and we'll bring your new pet out to you.
So first of all, there's more people can be doing online before they even get to where you are in Old Highway 90, right? You wanted them to check in online and get a sense of...
Absolutely. Get that appointment. Of course, you can see all of the animals that we have here at the shelter. But Dave, one of the things that we've been really urging people to do is to make sure that they don't have their heart set on a particular animal. A lot of people will make an appointment, and that appointment may be a week out. And the dog that they absolutely, totally, 110% have to have, we can almost guarantee you it's not going to be here anymore because we have so many adoptions going on, because we have so many rescues that are partnering with us. So what we suggest is that, number one, people keep an open mind, and that, number two, they look at all the animals that we have the day that they come in, or even the night before they come in. And again, keep an open mind. That Chihuahua that you saw might have been the absolute perfect pet for you, but when you come in, you might find somebody else that you fall in love with just as easily.
Yeah, we'll see what the universe has in mind for the
exactly.
For the matchmaking with the pets and their new owners. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the clinical aspect of what's happening with pets in the pandemic, find out about what's happening with the science on COVID and what's happening with the dogs and cats and if they can get it and if they can spread it and these types of questions a lot of people have. And you can call in with your questions, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be back in 1 minute. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about pets in the pandemic, what's happening with our furry friends, cats and dogs, during COVID-19. We're now joined by Dr. Lori Teller, clinical associate professor in the Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Sciences, past president of the Texas Veterinary Medical Association. Dr. Teller, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So I've seen some stories saying that dogs and cats can get COVID. What do we need to know about that?
So if that makes lots of headlines, and the risk is really low. We can count still on our fingers the number of animals who have, the dogs and cats that have tested positive. Very few of them have actually shown any symptoms. If they do, they've been mild. And there is no evidence that our pets can spread the disease to us. So if humans are getting it, they're getting it from other humans.
Lisa Norwood, a quick question. I had also read that when these headlines came out about dogs and cats being able to get COVID, that there was some level of panic and that people were surrendering their animals in high numbers because of these concerns. Did y'all see anything like that?
We didn't. We didn't see anything like that. And like Doc said, you know, the evidence that animals can, or pets can, spread COVID just isn't there at this point. And the CDC's awareness about the very, very small number of pets, the domesticated animals that have been infected with the virus, it's my understanding that those have been mostly after they've had contact with people who've had COVID-19. So one of the things that we suggest is that anytime you're interacting with your pet, if you are concerned, you need to be washing your hands both before and afterwards. And that's just a good thing to do regardless.
So, Dr. Teller, with the concern that this that people are saying, oh, dogs and cats can have COVID, and there's been very few, but they seem to be sensationally reported about that this is happening. So we know that this is not something that if a person has tested positive, a human person tests positive for COVID, they don't have to worry about isolating themselves from their animals, do they?
The general recommendation is that they do isolate themselves from their animals, mostly just to limit potential exposure, just like they would isolate from the rest of their family. While the risk is really low, the CDC does recommend that you stay isolated and try to keep your pet away if you are positive.
Yeah, I've heard that, and also people say, but then again, you know, who else are you going to have contact with? I mean, you may need the those droopy eyes more than you need, you know, that is at this time when you're
And I agree. If I'm stuck in bed being isolated from everybody else, I'm probably going to be snuggling with my dog or cat. So I can tell you what the CDC recommends and what people are really going to do.
So, and Dr. Lori Teller, as the past president of the Texas Veterinary Medical Association, I wonder about how people are taking care of their animals right now. You know, typically in the before times, people had a routine. They would go to the vet every once in a while and have their animals checked or do some treatments. And are people still able to do that?
Yes. People are taking amazing care of their pets right now. There are a lot of people working from home, and so they are spending all day with their dogs and cats, and they are identifying things that they may not have been aware of before. They may be finding some new lumps on them. They may notice that their pet is drinking more water than they thought it usually did, things like that. And so they are seeking veterinary care for those. How that looks is a little bit different. A lot of clinics are not allowing clients into their hospitals right now because it's hard to socially distance within the hospital. So many times you may be driving up to the clinic and someone will come out to your car and get your pet. And the pet goes inside, and then the veterinary staff or the veterinarian will call you or FaceTime you and get more information about what is going on and do their exam, and then call you again and further discuss what tests may need to be done or what treatment is recommended.
So these veterinary centers that we have, they've gotten together, they've adopted best practices. Now it's basically not that much different than getting your curbside groceries or pizza. Now they have these expectations that you will show up, you will have all these things in hand, and you never even have to leave your vehicle, and you can get your pet cared for.
Exactly. Right. And if they think it's going to be a long time, you can go run a couple of errands, things like that, or even go home, and then they'll let you know when it's time to come back and pick up your pet.
Also, there's talking about telemedicine for veterinary care. How does that work?
Yeah, no, and that's a great option, especially for people who are at high risk. So you communicate with your veterinarian, so you and your pet are at home. Your veterinarian through a computer, through a tablet, through a smartphone, most of these platforms will work through any of those. And if you let your veterinarian know what's going on, maybe Fluffy got into the garbage last night and now has some diarrhea, or there's some signs of some anxiety, things like that. And so you can have a visit with your veterinarian through your computer or smartphone. And a lot of times your veterinarian will be able to make recommendations that you can do at home, or just have you come by and pick up some medication. And other times your veterinarian may say, no, that does sound like a more serious problem and I need to see your pet. And then you will do again, like what we talked about, where you'll go drop your pet off. But for people who are at higher risk, this really limits the time they have to get out. And if your veterinarian says that, yes, you really need to bring your dog or cat in, then you know you really need to make arrangements for that to happen.
Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question about how to care for your pets in the pandemic or other issues regarding pet care here in San Antonio, give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Dr. Teller, we're spending a lot of time with our cats and dogs and other friends that we may have in our household. And so they're getting used to it. It's been a while. Eventually, you do have to leave the house. And it does seem, though, when you leave, that that separation anxiety seems to be dialed up to 11 now. I mean, is that true?
Yeah, for some of these animals, it's definitely going to be rough as people transition back to school and work. They've had our attention all day, and now that's getting cut back. So a couple of things that I recommend. One, if you know when you're going to be headed back to school or back to work, it's a good time now to start cutting back on the amount of time that you are actively spending with your pet. That may be that they get a special toy or treat that they have to go into another room to enjoy, just so that they're used to entertaining themselves away from you. That may mean that you start with some crate training. If you've been walking your pet twice a day, morning and evening, and going on long walks, it may be time to cut back to what your new schedule will be. So that may be that you're just going on one walk a day, or you're doing two walks, but they're shorter, things like that. If your pet has real anxiety problems, then it would be a really good idea now to talk to your veterinarian, because there may be some medications that your pet can be given in the short term to help lessen the anxiety and make the transition easier. But you want to get those started while the anxiety level's more at a 2 or a 3 before it hits 10 or 11, because it's a lot easier to deal with when we're dealing with a lower level.
Seems so, Lisa Norwood, have you seen an uptick in people doing adoptions right now?
We actually have. We actually, before the show, wanted to pull our numbers so that we'd be able to let you know what kind of numbers we were looking at. And, of course, you know, we really got going with the social distancing guidelines in the beginning of April. And so in looking at what adoptions we've done over the course of April to today, we're looking at a little over 2,200 animals that we've adopted out. And what that means when it comes to our live release rate, that is the number of animals that we're able to find positive placement for, right now during this time period that we've been in the pandemic, our live release rate sitting at 93.8%. So that means that of all the animals that we're bringing into the shelter, we're able to find positive placement for them at 94%.
So my question for Dr. Teller is, as more people have adopted animals, probably because they were staying at home for a while and they figured now may be a good time to get another dog, But I'm not, when this pandemic eventually ends or people move on to a different way of being at home, they may have to start going back to work on site. They have to deal with that now. Then there's some going, and those animals may not be accustomed to that. And you talked about the anxiety. How do dogs manifest that anxiety?
That's a great question. So they could pace more. They may pant more frequently. They'll have a harder time settling down to rest. They may be very jumpy. And as it progresses, they may start to become destructive. So they may start chewing up a piece of furniture, getting into things they didn't normally get into. And dogs that have extreme levels of separation anxiety will even chew at the door that you go in and out of, or the window that's next to the door, or break through the glass just out of their desperation to find you and be back with you. And so, of course, we want to alleviate the problem before it ever gets that extreme. So this is why it's a good idea to start preparing your dog now. And then we see this in cats too. Cats that maybe experience some levels of stress and anxiety may start over grooming. They'll actually start pulling the hair off, especially on their legs or their bellies, or they may stop using their litter box. They'll start urinating somewhere else. So those can be signs of stress in a cat. So we have to recognize that they can be suffering as well with the changes in schedules.
If you have more than one dog, if you have two, three, is that going to be less of a separation anxiety burden for the animal because they have each other?
That depends on the animal. Dogs will feed off of each other. So if you have one dog that has some anxiety, it is possible that that will in turn make your other dogs more anxious. If you have a dog that is super chill and calm, though, that could help your slightly anxious dog. Unfortunately, it seems like the one that's anxious tends to then get the other ones going. So even if you have more than one animal, we still recommend getting everybody adjusted to the new schedule and nipping the anxiety in the bud before it becomes really traumatic.
Some tropical birds that you have, like a conure or parrot, they have that too, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They'll start feather picking. That's a big sign of stress in birds. So that's certainly a time that you want to talk to your veterinarian about things that you can do to help mitigate the effects of that. They may need to go on some kind of supplement, get actually some more attention, things like that to help alleviate their stress.
Because they really get attached to an individual. These birds do.
Yeah, they do. They do. Definitely.
And so the supplement would be like some sort of like Prozac type of a thing for animals?
Yeah, there's also some natural remedies that are available that aren't quite as strong as Prozac. So typically those work better when you're dealing with mild anxiety. And then when the anxiety starts to ramp up, then we start going to medications like Prozac or Xanax or things like that.
We're talking about pets and the pandemic. How are your pets coping? I'm sure they're loving all the extra belly rubs and the doggy treats and the walkies that you're going out on. But when that wraps up, how are they going to cope with the return to normal? You have questions about adopting pets in the pandemic and other pet issues and questions. Give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back after this break.
I'm Yvette Benavides, the host of Book Public, a Texas Public Radio podcast about books. Listen in to Book Public, where we'll talk to authors about their books and why and how they wrote them. At Book Public, we're committed to connecting listeners to books that help us understand today's world and each other a little bit better.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about pets in the pandemic. If you've got a question or a comment, 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Andrea is on the line. And Andrea, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me. Just a quick question. I have two female dogs that grew up together, and since the pandemic started, they just started fighting, and they can't be in the same room together anymore. And I'm just wondering, is there anything that can be done about that? I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Andrea, thank you for the question. So Dr. Lori Teller, clinical associate professor at the Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Sciences, past president of the Texas Veterinary Medical Association. What do you say?
Yes, so this is going to be a problem that is going to take a fair amount of work. I would certainly reach out to your veterinarian first. Let's make sure that there's not a health problem that has popped up during the pandemic that's making one of the dogs antsy or more reactive. And if we can eliminate medical issues, then we need to start addressing the behavioral issues. And this will probably require some medication as well to relieve some of the anxiety. But then there's going to be a lot of training work that's involved. Basically, they're going to have to be reintroduced to each other very slowly and with some training guidance. It may be worth having a consultation with a veterinary behaviorist. There are a few in Texas, or getting a really good trainer involved. But this will probably be something that takes several weeks to even a few months, and it's going to require some supervision by a veterinarian to make it happen.
Are these dogs, are they one's trying to assert dominance and the other one's not having it? Is that type of, or are they jealous of attention? What seems to be behind these types of?
It's different for every pair of dogs. So some of it could be attention related. Aggression issues in dogs is really a lot more complex than just one dog is trying to assert dominance over the other one, because dominance in dogs tends to be a little more situational. So it can be complex. Certainly having the human at home all the time has probably disrupted their normal routine as well, and there is some pressure for one to get more attention than the other, but it is going to take a fair amount to sort out what is causing each dog to do what it is doing.
We have a question from Twitter. Marie asked, what will the city do if funding for animal care services is cut for the next year's budget? I read the community input feedback from citizens, and a lot of them recommended animal care services be cut, but the city needs ACS. I'm looking at the budget right now for the city. I pulled it up, and I don't see any cuts right now for animal care services. It's pretty much, it's gone up just a little bit. Lisa Norwood, can you address that?
Yeah, I certainly can. And Officer Sims, who's been directly engaged in the budget talks with our director, can address as well. We've been very lucky in the budget discussions with our city leadership. They understand the importance of animal care services. And at this point, we don't expect that there'll be any sizable reductions in animal care services staffing or budget.
And Officer Sims.
Yeah, I mean, just pretty much in agreement with Lisa. We've been the benefactor over the last few years. Everyone knows that any budgetary issue, there's kind of an ebb and flow. We have been fortunate enough to get a fairly substantial a budget from the city over the last few years. It shows that they are engaged and that they understand that animal care services and the services we provide are vital. And even in these tough times, the city manager and the city council, they've come out and they've supported not a huge increase in the budget, but they do want to sustain the programs that we've implemented over the last 5 to 10 years.
I see that the authorized positions will increase by 2 for the new fiscal year if this budget's approved. What are you adding?
Right now, we've actually there's been some transition where several of our kennel attendant positions were temporary positions. One of those positions will actually be on Lisa's team with the educational outreach team. So what we're seeing is basically trying to support and formalize all of the folks that actually care for the animals on a day-to-day basis, as well as trying to make our outreach team a little bit more robust.
So, Officer Sims, during the pandemic, dogs don't stop breeding in the streets, and that was the problem that we've had for generations here in San Antonio. How has that been being dealt with still?
So like I said, we're still out there, and we've, you know, it's been nonstop for us. We did have a hiatus for a little while due to the close, you know, the close proximity that it takes to do surgeries and things like that. So there was a period where we actually had to completely stop doing surgeries. However, fortunately, now we've us as well as our partners have put protocols in place. The partnerships with our partners that are doing free surgeries for us, those have kind of kicked into overdrive, and our actual surgical team here on ACS is getting back up into a more normal state. So really we've got a little bit of backlog right now as a community, and that's because, as Dr. Teller alluded to earlier, a lot of these places, they don't want a whole lot of folks in there, you know, in their actual establishment. But we've been fortunate enough, again, to work with, you know, pet shots and Humane Society and other partners to be able to get out a lot of vouchers for the folks that did adopt during the pandemic when everything was kind of shut down, and we're able to get those animals taken care of on the back end. And we're, of course, we're tracking all of them, which animals need to be spayed and neutered, and we're in close contact with those individuals. But we've had a good amount of compliance so far. Seems like everybody wants their animals that adopted from us to be spayed and neutered. And I'm sure we'll have the onesies and twosies that decide that they would rather keep their animal unsterilized, at which point we will be sending enforcement out to make sure that that happens.
Lisa Norwood, you said earlier that you have seen an increase in people bringing in their animals to be spayed and neutered, right?
Well, what we have seen is, well, first off, it's important to point out, and to back up what Officer Sims was saying, is that Animal Care Services does not and never has provided public veterinary care. So when we're talking about spay-neuters here at Animal Care Services, we're talking about the animals that are being adopted out of Animal Care Services. We're talking about feral cats as part of our community cat program. We're even talking about animals that are going into other rescues or other shelters, adoptables program. So those are the spay-neuters that we're specifically talking about. We're not talking about a reduction in public spay-neuter, so to speak, but in the animals that we actually care for here at Animal Care Services. And like Officer Sims said, that is now picked back up again as of mid-July, and so we're starting to get back up to our regular pace. But in terms of people wanting spay-neuter, absolutely. We continue to see that in our community, that folks understand increasingly the importance of spay-neuter. And San Antonio is very lucky. We're very lucky from the standpoint that we have numerous free and low-cost spay-neuter clinics here in our community. But on top of that, and just as importantly, we have a very robust veterinary community here in San Antonio. So a lot of veterinarians to choose from, a lot of different places that you can go if for whatever reason you can't afford to get your animal sterilized. So a lot of different options for people. Not really an excuse anymore.
Got an email from a listener. My husband and I purchased a dog about 18 months ago. He is a purebred standard poodle. We are in our 70s and have been pretty isolated since March. My dog has become very difficult. I think it's because he's no longer getting the exercise that he needs. He's more aggressive and barking a lot. We are ready to get rid of him. Any advice? So, Dr. Lori Teller, what could you tell our listener?
Yeah, exercise is going to be really, really important for this dog. If the owners are not comfortable going on walks with the pet, if they live, even if they have a backyard where they can play ball with the dog or get the dog to walk laps in the yard, otherwise they may want to find a friend, neighbor, family member that they trust who's also been cautious, who could possibly come and take the dog for a daily walk. There are some various training centers and doggy daycare centers in San Antonio that are in operation. and they could look at enrolling their dog in one of those. And again, that would be something where they could just drive up, drop the dog off, and then come back later in the day to pick up. And that would be another way to get the dog some socialization and exercise as well. And then again, conferring with their veterinarian about potential medications for the anxiety and a behavior modification plan as well.
If you get a purebred poodle, don't they tend to be pretty high-strung, their nervous Nellies?
It depends, because there's toy poodles, miniature poodles, standard poodles. And so a lot of that depends on the personality and of the dog that it came from. Some of them make great lap dogs, but others, especially if they're not getting the exercise and attention that they need, that can exacerbate some of their high-strung activity.
And when Lisa Norwood, I got about a minute here, someone says they need to get rid of a dog, do they take it to animal care services?
Just like all of our other services, we are operating our owner surrenders by appointment only. And as you can imagine, we would want anybody who is thinking that they do have to surrender their pet to make sure that they've done everything that they can and always choose the shelter as their last possible option.
All right, we're taking another break, and our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment, call in. The number is 833-877-8255. What's your experience been like with your pets during the pandemic? Are you worried about what will happen when you go back to work or your kids go back to school? Are you interested in adopting or fostering a pet? What do you need to know about how things have changed with pet adoption, taking care of pets, or dealing with pets now that we're dealing with COVID-19? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're talking about pets in the pandemic. We got a doggy update from John on Twitter. My dog is doing well. He basically gets to hang out with me all day long to make sure I'm okay. No, I do not consider it a new form of micromanagement. If you want to give us an update about how you're doing with your pets in the pandemic, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Officer Shannon Sims, not all dogs are as chill as John's dog. We still get dog bites out there. What's happening with dog bites?
Oh, yeah, we still have the dog bites that are taking place. We are seeing a lot of the bites right now that we're seeing are what we call owner victim same, which means basically the owner was bitten by their own animal. Kind of anecdotally, what we've noticed is there are fewer animals that are on the streets. As Lisa and I, we've been through quite a few different studies, and we've done surveys and everything, where the majority of the animals that we find on the streets are actually owned animals, and we're seeing a significant reduction in that. So if we can take anything good away from from this whole COVID situation, the pandemic and everything, it's that as the doctor said earlier, we do see people are actually taking better care of their animals, spending more time with their animals, they're on the street less, which means we're seeing fewer of the dog bites where the dogs are on the streets attacking people, and more bites associated with, hey, I was petting Fuffy and he nipped me on the finger.
But that can sometimes, does it require attention? They call you for something like that?
It depends on the individual. Sometimes if the individual wants to seek medical care, they're worried about maybe an infection or something like that. Any bite where someone goes to a medical facility, the medical facility is required to contact us and let us know that there has been a bite. And then we do an investigation on it. The biggest thing that we're looking for in situations like that is the animal current on rabies vaccinations, and if not, making sure that that animal is quarantined for the mandatory 10 days so that we can just make sure that the animal's okay, the victim's okay, and nothing to worry about.
Dr. Lori Teller, if you have a animal biting a household member like that, what does that tell you? What's your first concern?
My first concern is the animal injured or have another health problem? We'll see this a lot of times when animals are in pain. and they're trying to hide it, and then an owner may pet the animal at that location. So the first thing we want to do is rule out some underlying medical condition. But then if that's ruled out, then we get back to some of our concerns about behavioral issues, and again, making sure that those are addressed appropriately and trying to stop them earlier rather than later.
Lisa Norwood, y'all are still doing pet fostering. How is that going?
We are. We are still doing fostering. In fact, when the pandemic really got going and the unfortunate lockdown orders started coming down, we knew that it was going to actually be an opportunity for us to talk to people about fostering. And as we got started with the lockdowns and things started getting a little crazy with the pandemic, we saw a lot more people taking interest in fostering. And so we signed up several hundred new fosters towards the beginning of the pandemic. And we've continued to work with those folks. You know, one of the things that a lot of people have to bear in mind is the summer is the busiest season at any animal shelter. So in addition to, of course, dealing with the pandemic like the rest of our community, the animal shelter is also dealing with it being puppy and kitten season. This is the time of year that we start to see more and more animals coming in to the shelter. And so with that in mind, we've been working with our fosters and, of course, always pushing for adoptions.
Now, it's still pretty hot outside. It's cooled off a little bit. It's no longer in the triple digits, but it's still hot if you've got a full coat of hair on you. So extreme heat and these pets and their health, Dr. Lori Teller, how do we make sure that the dog is not overheating?
Yeah, definitely. Lots of pets still at risk for heat stroke. So when walking your dogs, we still recommend going out early in the morning or late in the evening during the cooler parts of the day. Try to not have your dog stay outside for all hours of the day where it's hot. There needs to be some time spent in the air conditioning. If for some reason you do need to leave your dog outside, you need to make sure there is plenty of shade and water. And make sure there is shade that lasts all day long. That spot that's shady at 8 or 9 in the morning is not going to be shady at 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Now, one of the big dangers of having pets at home with their owners all hours of the day is there's probably a lot more treats and things going into the dog's dish. Their dog's putting on the pounds. Is that a concern, Dr. Lori Teller?
Yeah, the COVID-19 is not escaping our pets either, for sure. So, yes, we are seeing that. And as we all know, it's a lot easier to put the weight on than it is to get the weight off, whether we're humans or animals. And we are doing lots and lots of dietary counseling on appropriate ways of giving your pets treats. You can use puzzle toys to help occupy your pets, even with some of their regular dog food. But definitely treats should not make up more than 10% of any animal's diet. And they do have a lot of calories.
We have an email from Janet. What happens to older pets who are brought in? Can an older animal still be adopted? Lisa Norwood.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, some people prefer having an older pet as opposed to, you know, a young one that still needs a little bit of growing up to do, both age-wise and maturity-wise. So, yeah, absolutely. A lot of animals that are brought in to the shelter are older pets, and sometimes those make the best pets of all. So we're absolutely adopting out older animals when they come in as well.
We're also in hurricane season. We've already had evacuations from the coast already, and we've got a lot of stuff going on in the Gulf. How do you do disaster planning for your pets, Dr. Lori Teller?
So it's a good idea to have a go kit ready. So just like you would pack up things that you need to take with you and your family, make sure you have several days' supply of food, any medications that your pet may be taking regularly. Make sure that there is an ID tag on the collar with accurate phone information to reach you. Your pet should be microchipped, and not only should there be a microchip, but that information needs to be registered in the national database. That's the only way that we can link the chip and the animal to the owner. Take plenty of water. Take your pet's bowls with you. Make sure that they are trained to walk on a leash or to be in a carrier so that you have a way of controlling them when you get to your shelter location or evacuation site. And then it's always a good idea to have a copy of vaccination records and any pertinent medical history as well.
And so we know that when you do have an evacuation during a disaster, people who run these emergency shelters are pet aware. They realize that they have to be able to accommodate animals. Otherwise, some people would never leave their animals behind, Dr. Teller.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is actually law, that there are, have to be shelters that will accommodate pets. It's important for these owners to recognize that they're still going to be responsible for their pet's care. So they'll still be the ones walking them and feeding them and things like that. There are veterinarians or veterinary staff that are on site at least part of the time to help with any minor issues.
Got an email.
Yes, that is important.
Got an email from Ruth. My dog has previously gone to work with me every day and enjoyed the car ride and change of location. Our new commute is a walk in the morning. It's been a good transition for both of us and helps get us into a routine that sets up the tone right away. So it's great to have a little morning walk, but it's interesting. So Lisa Norwood, have you heard about more workplaces allowing dogs to come to work?
Well, that's the workplace that I want to work at, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. There's a number of animal-friendly workplaces in San Antonio. But like Dr. Teller was saying just a little bit ago, you know, doggy daycares are out there. There's plenty of other options for people, professional dog walkers, all different ways that you can have your pet engaged if you do have to work from home, or if you're not one of those lucky ones that can take your dog with you to your offsite workplace. One of the things that we like to encourage people to do is to basically collaborate and share together. And one of the ways that we've done that is we started a pet parents page for local pet owners where they can go and find those really cool places in San Antonio that are dog friendly, whether it be a workplace, whether it be, you know, someplace for recreation. It's our pet parents page, and it's Pet Parents of SATX. Pet Parents of SATX. It's on Facebook, and it's nothing but pet parents. Different pet owners that get together and share tips like that about work places that allow dogs, about different stores that allow animals, restaurants even that allow animals here in San Antonio. And it's all for pet parents here in San Antonio, and anybody can join it. Pet Parents of SATX Facebook group.
Okay, we're running out of time. I want to hit the highlights one more time really quickly. So Lisa Norwood, you're telling folks if they want to adopt, Animal Care Services is capable of dealing with that, but you want them to go online first, right?
Absolutely. SAACS.net is our website. That's where you can find a way to make an appointment.
And Officer Shannon Sims, you and your officers are out there making sure that people are safe with their pets. And if you see some animal cruelty, call you at 311, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. I want to thank all of our guests, Lisa Norwood, Officer Shannon Sims with Animal Care Services of San Antonio, and Dr. Lori Teller. Thank you so much. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Ruben Garcia and Kathleen Creedon. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.